Please be seated. Caroling. Two pregnant women, one young, poor, and unwed, the other far beyond the age to conceive, meet in the hill country of Judea to celebrate or perhaps commiserate their miraculous pregnancies. A baby leaps in the womb. They express astonishment and sing. The story is odd, but it's also filled with joy. Here is a picture of the world turned upside down. Hierarchies are subverted. The mighty are brought low. Two marginalized, obscure, and pregnant women carry the future and proclaim the coming of the Messiah. Luke gives particular attention to God's work among ordinary people. In his words, we see God choosing the lowly rather than the high and the mighty to fulfill the plan for redemption. The angel Gabriel is sent to a young girl betrothed to a carpenter. They lived in an insignificant town in an unimportant province of a vast Roman Empire. Mary was favored by God, but it brought no material advantages to her. Instead, it brought scandal and a child who would be born out of wedlock and later executed as a criminal. The story is so familiar to us that we let its familiarity mask its scandal. And in so doing, we run the risk of missing the profound character of Mary's words. The source of joy is almost always something deeper than what we see on the surface. Joy is a constant theme in the Gospel of Luke, as is it the place of women. 17 or 18 times the word joy or rejoice appear in the Gospel. The joy we encounter in the Annunciation and in the birth of Jesus happens again and again and again in the joy of forgiveness, in healings, in the raising of the dead, in the return of the prodigal son, and the receiving of the outcasts throughout Jesus' ministry. Luke's gospel even ends with the sentence, "And they returned to Jerusalem with great joy." The Magnificat, Mary's glorious song, is one of the most prophetic passages in the Bible, and its poetry echoes Isaiah's words to the exiles 5 centuries earlier. Unfortunately, because of Mary's place in the Roman Catholic Church, we Protestants, rather self-righteously, have often passed over the Magnificat, and in doing so, I think, robbed ourselves of one of the Bible's most beautiful and powerful passage. This is, as I mentioned, the original Christmas carol, a carol which means to sing or praise joyously. She was caroling. Like an aria in an opera, it stops the action of the narrative in order to celebrate the greatness and fullness of God. Her words are humble and deeply personal, but intelligent and filled with great theology. Mary proclaims the promised topsy-turvy future of God as an already accomplished fact in her choice as the bearer of the Messiah. Her words are joyfully subversive. "He has scattered the proud, he has brought down the powerful and lifted up the lowly. He has filled the hungry with great things and sent the rich away empty. This is a remarkable response to what God offers. And it's a perfect frame for Advent. Joy is an elusive concept for us, one that we often confuse with happiness or pleasure. Happiness is usually triggered by something external, people, places, things, events. When children get the presents that they wished for at Christmas, they're happy. When we get a promotion, or around here I've learned when UNC beats Duke, it makes us happy. Joy, on the other hand, is more internal. It's an attitude of the heart. Author and theologian Henry Nouwen puts it this way. He says, joy is the experience of knowing that you are unconditionally loved and that nothing, sickness, failure, emotional distress, oppression, war, and even death can take that love away. Thus, joy and sorrow can coexist. Not only that, but joy can be found in the midst of challenging circumstances. This is Mary's joy. C.S. Lewis, in his autobiography, Surprised by Joy, offers another valuable reflection. He sees joy as something otherworldly. For him, true joy reminds and points to something deeper in us. When joy arises, it's not the result of a satisfied desire, but a reminder of an unsatisfied one, a deep longing for God, a hungry pursuit of God, that God's heart that never ends. Joy gives us a proximity to God's heart, and that's why it's so much more satisfying than earthly happiness. Lewis says that no one who has tasted it would ever exchange it for all the pleasures in the world. But then he observes, joy is never in our power, but pleasure often is. We can't plan, manipulate, or buy joy. It comes unexpectedly. All we can do is hope for its coming. Advent. C.S. Lewis was a remarkable novelist, scholar, critic, and Christian apologist. His seven fantasy books that make up the Chronicles of Narnia were one day the equivalent of Harry Potter for at least two generations. Lewis has fallen out of favor lately, except for some evangelicals. But whatever criticism might be leveled at him, we would be foolish to dismiss his contributions, and in particular, his insights into joy should not be overlooked. Lewis once wrote a great little essay entitled A Meditation in a Tool Shed, in which he examines the difference between simply being pleased by an experience and the deeper contemplation of that experience. He tells of once standing in a dark tool shed and seeing a sunbeam shining through a crack above the door. He says while looking at the beam, he was seeing the beam, not things by it. Then instead of merely looking at the sunbeam, he looks through it, out into the world beyond the dark tool shed. He said, instantly, the whole previous picture vanished. I saw no tool shed, and above all, no beam. Instead, I saw framed in the irregular cranny at the top of the door, green leaves moving in the branches of the tree outside. And beyond that, about 90 million miles away, a sun. And I saw something I had never seen before. His whole view changed. This is the eye of the poet, whose perspective enables her to see truth and eternity in the mundane. There is a difference between simply looking at an object or living through an experience and instead using that experience to see something greater, more profound. We are practical and busy people. We have things to do, places to go, people to meet. We have agendas that have to be followed. The deeper dimension of things is often lost on us. We are not accustomed to examining our lives in this way. True, we enjoy sensory pleasures life provides, but rarely do we look for more. Lewis suggests that because we're so busy doing things and looking at them, joy can elude us. Joy, he says, is found in pausing and looking along with what we do in life, and taking time to see eternity at work. Here, he says, is where we'll find genuine joy and contentment. Now, this is not foreign to us. There is a bit of poet in each of us, isn't there? We have experienced them, those moments when we seem to understand ourselves and our world a little better. And for a single instance, we come to know the love and loveliness of creation. Unplanned and unexpected, joy arrives. It could be while we're just walking in the woods, when we see a single leaf drift effortlessly from a maple tree to our feet. And in that fleeting moment, we know something new, something special about the meaning of the seasons and the cycles of life that no book could reveal. Then, too, it could be that we see it in the unrestrained giggles of a small child or in the spontaneous and exuberant hug from someone we love, that without speaking, in that moment, we know a deeper meaning of family, of companionship, and of love. Or it could happen in the singing of a single verse of a Christmas carol we've sung 1,000 times before, or in the lighting of a single candle. Something comes over us, and in that moment we capture that elusive meaning of Christmas. Without a word, our heart stirs, we smile, and we know something of what God has imagined for us. The poet Wendell Berry captured it beautifully in a Christmas poem entitled "Remembering That It Happened Here." He writes of entering a barn on one chilly morning to do his regular chores and stopping before an empty stall filled with hay. He stops and looks in, and in that moment rediscovers the holiness of the Nativity. "We might find them breathing there," he says, "in the morning light, the air around them as joyful as a choir. We stand with one hand on the door, looking into another world." This is our world. The pale daylight coming just as before, our chores to do, the cattle all awake, our own frozen breath hanging in front of us. And we are here, as we have never been before. Sighted not as before, our place now holy, although we knew it not. These are the moments when we have a chance to see things as God intended them. When it happens, we are moved, and joy wells up within us. For C.S. Lewis, these experiences of joy are but signposts on the main road, pointing us ever onward to the greatest joy that we can ever experience, the incarnation of God's love in Jesus Christ. Mary said that her soul magnified the Lord. In her song, we see an expectant mother's humble joy. Her words are a testimony to the glorious and mysterious power of the universe made manifest in her. These astonishing and subversive words are the hallmark of all that we say and do in Advent. May it be in this coming week and in the Christmas tide that follows, we will be able to see with the eye of the poet and the soul of a prophet. May it be that we can open our hearts and minds to God's inbreaking of good news. May it be that we can have our own magnificent moments of joy. In Mary's words, let it be. Amen. God is with us in amazing and powerful ways, bringing shining new hope into the world. Like Mary and Elizabeth so long ago, the ministry of our church is radiant with that great hope. And like Mary and Elizabeth, our congregation and the whole United Church of Christ also trusts in the promises of God. In our giving this morning, our joy overflows in generosity. Let us now receive the morning offering.